Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnall-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and this week, Jarena Marton. Gwyn's going to ask the first questions, and I'll get a turn in the end.
Jarena, it's lovely to have you this afternoon. Now, most of your books have been illustrated in colour. Why did you decide on black and white for this novel?
So when I get a story to illustrate, I read it several times to get the feeling of it, to get into it. Then I start to do some sketches to see what kind of technique would be the best for each particular story. This is the reason why I used in the past different medias like oil pastel, gouache or acrylic, for my illustrations. This novel alone is from the period of time shortly before 1800. At that time, books were still sort of quite expensive luxury, often printed in black and white. This is one of the reasons why Felicity, the author of the novel, and I agreed that black and white illustration will be the best medium for this text.
Oh, seems logical. So tell us a little about the method you chose for making the pictures themselves. You didn't use pen and ink, for instance. Why not?
Yes, you are right. I could use pen and ink or pencil to do my illustrations, and actually I did some sketches in both techniques. But finally, I decided to use a scrape board. Working on a scrape board is very time-consuming, but it does very nice effects. And in my opinion, this particular technique translates well the feeling of the story.
I don't know much about scrape boarding. Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
It's sort of hard piece of paper, black, and you have some sort of special scrapers.
Like a blade?
Blade, yeah. Actually, I'm using Hecto knife for everything. And you scratch, so it's opposite effect. Instead of putting black on white, which normally you do, this is you are scratching the white out of black.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating.
It is.
It also has a very interesting final effect in that it's rather like reminiscent of a woodcut.
Yeah, a little bit, or old lithographies, you know, the way how the book's been done long time ago. Oh. That's why I choose it. It has this feeling, yeah.
That's fascinating.
So, Jarena, you were the one who decided which scenes in the novel would be illustrated, though you did ask me, I know. But how did you make those choices? And what was the appeal of the scenes you chose?
So, in the text of each story, including this one, there are several culminating moments. These are very often the moments when a hero or heroine of the story is going through some trial that crystallizes his or her character. These, of course, are important to illustrate. But in every story, you have passages that do not have such a deep impact on the protagonist. They are describing external, beautiful moments. For example, in this novel alone, you are describing a scene where John and his friend Opichi are going night fishing in a canoe. Such moments are also good to illustrate, as they give to the reader an opportunity to glimpse events that are not so common in our time. So I choose to illustrate some scenes to show the emotional development of our protagonists and some scenes for their sheer beauty.
Well, your pictures often draw their power from your depiction of emotion. Did you find the historical setting confined your imagination in that way? How did you solve the problem?
So I illustrate many stories, and each of them was from different time setting. One of them, for example, a Japanese story, was from over 1,000 years ago. This was very challenging. as at that particular moment, I did not know too much about Japanese way of life, and especially not about life in Japan 1,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. So to do good and accurate illustrations, one must start with research to become familiar with the period of the time of the particular story, to know what was the clothing people used to wear, what manners did they have, what kind of commodities they had, what kind of music they've been listening, etc., etc. Actually, it is very exciting because through each new story I have opportunity to illustrate, I'm learning so many new things. A historical setting, it's not a restriction. I do not feel confined. In the contrary, it is challenging and enriching, and I love it.
That is an absolutely fascinating glimpse into the side of the illustrator. You know, you tend to think of the author has written the story and now we're just going to get a pretty picture, but it's so complicated. That is really interesting to find out. Thank you, Julia.
Plus, very often I'm trying, even in my illustrations, to invent a little story which is not in a text. Because if you would be illustrating, following exactly the text, there is no need for illustration. So you need to show more than it is in a text.
Wow. I've learned something today, for sure. Felicity, were you going to read another short piece for us?
I'm going to read from Josephine Fontaine's diary. She keeps this journal in French, though, of course, in the book it is mostly in English, so that everybody can understand it. And in it, she feels free to say things that she can't say to her very kind adopted family. She's very happy to be with them and appreciative, but she also feels alone in the world, perhaps alone in a way that John feels alone, or perhaps in a different way. Anyway, this is towards the end of the story, and Josephine has had problems with one of the young neighbors who has been following her about and is very possessive. Oh, how quickly joy can be destroyed. I had been singing at my work, every chore a pleasure, since Madame, who tells me to call her ma'am now, as do the children, told me that of course they want me to go with them to the new settlement. I am part of their family, she said, until someone with a greater claim should come for me. I was so light-hearted. My anxieties floating away like bubbles after they spoke to Mr. Patterson and told Billy to pester me no more. I hadn't thought that Billy's temper would defy his elders, even his father. My carefree time lasted only 3 days. I was feeding the hens in the yard when a thundershower drove me into the barn. The rain beat a great tattoo on the roof as I climbed to the loft to fetch hay for the goats. I threw down a bundle and was about to descend when I saw a shadowy figure lurking in the storm's darkness. Someone had slipped in behind me. I knew it couldn't be Monsieur, for he'd walked over to tell the minister that I was to go with them to the bush and to discuss the delivery of any letter which might come from Detroit. I peered through the trapdoor and saw to my horror that the man, for it surely was a man, was putting his shoulder to the heavy door and pushing it shut. Oh, how my heart raced and my body trembled. I reached out and pulled at the ladder, praying I was strong enough to haul it into the loft, but it slipped in my sweaty hands. Before I could raise it more than a foot or so, Billy, for of course it was he, turned from the door and caught hold of the lower end. I stepped back from the opening and stumbled over something. I bent down and picked up the hay fork. Oh, no, you shan't. I'll join you in the hay, he said, as he set the ladder down and started to climb, his footsteps slow and heavy like a tolling bell. There was nowhere to retreat or hide. The loft lay empty except for the last of the winter's hay. Cold grey light lit up the open space, exposing me and my fears. Billy's angry red face rose above the floor while I still stood, turned to stone, knowing I was trapped. Once she'd clambered out, He wrenched the ladder from its place so easily and threw it on the floor of the loft. Then he strode towards me and grabbed me by the arms, pinching me cruelly. "If I can't marry you, I'll take you now without a blessing," he growled at me. "And if you quicken, your guardians and my father will soon change their minds." "No," I whispered, "no." He shook me till my head nodded wildly and I thought my neck would break. I was terrified, but I knew I had to stand up to him, to resist to the last of my strength. I twisted in his clutching hands and said, "So this is how you treat a wife. I'll never marry you. Never. Let me go." And I spit in his face. Then he did let me go and dashed his arm across the spittle on his cheeks. But before he could strike me as he thought to do, I brought my hand from behind my back, the fork with its two deadly prongs aimed at his chest. I was beyond fear now when he sidestepped, stretching out to grasp my dress and raising his arm to hit me. I stepped smartly backwards. My bodice tore at the neck and I shrieked with fury, moving sideways more violently than I'd meant to tear it from his grip. I swayed, trying to regain my balance, then saw the trap door open before me. I threw the fork aside and jumped. It was a leap into a black gloom for my shoulder, then my head hit the side of the opening, and I fell into darkness, a darkness of mind as well as the shadows of the barn. I screamed as pain swept over me, and I felt my blood spring from my wounds, and my arm smashed on the hard floor as I swooned.
Oh, poor Josephine. But I'm glad she stood up to him.
Me thank too.
Thank you, Felicity. And thank you, too, to Jarina for joining us today. So, Felicity, where can listeners buy your book?
So the book is available on Amazon and on Indigo. Also, it will be in local bookstores. And, of course, if you wish to order it from a local bookstore, they will be able to get it for you.
So thank you, Felicity. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. If you would like to connect with us, send your comments, your queries, or your suggestions of whom we might interview in future programs, please email us at wordonthehills897@gmail.com and leave a comment on our website, www.wordonthehills.com. Also on our website, you'll find all our past shows archived there. So if you want to listen to any of them, you can do so anytime and anywhere. Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you'll join us again next week.